evangelizing animists, understanding animists, and reaching them for the Lord. On one of my overseas ministry trips, an in-flight documentary caught my attention. Some anthropologist was waxing eloquent about the incredibly advanced Mayan civilization of Central America in the 15th century. They did not have a written language, but they were incredibly advanced. These Mayans built spectacular pyramid-like temples, all without the wheel. Of course, they did use slave labor to move all those massive stones, but the slaves were captured from neighboring tribes. Unfortunately, these impressive temples were used for human sacrifices, but the human sacrifices were necessary to make the sun rise each day. But they only used slaves and prisoners captured from neighboring tribes. None of this seemed to have dampened the enthusiasm of this anthropologist as he eagerly described the amazing, complex, and intricate Mayan civilization. They had a fascinating sport, which was a cross between a basketball and football, although you could only use your shoulder to score a goal, but unfortunately the losing team were all put to death. And so it carried on. I could only wonder at the mental and ethical gymnastics of this anthropologist and film presenter, I think it was National Geographic, what they were doing to present and praise the incredibly advanced Mayan civilization, which had not yet discovered the wheel, which did not have a written language, which used slave labor, which engaged in human sacrifice, and routinely executed the losing sports teams. What should be required viewing for all anthropology students at university is Mel Gibson's Apocalypto. This is a hard, realistic look at what the Mayan civilization was like before the coming of the gospel. Slave raids, massacres, ripping out beating hearts out of living sacrifices at the tops of their temples. When I went to the Field Museum in Chicago, I saw this cover on display, Lost Tribes, Lost Knowledge. When native cultures disappear, so does a trove of scientific and medical wisdom. And Lost Tribes, Lost Knowledge. I mean, this is a reverence for paganism. And the cover was of a primitive tribesman from Papua New Guinea with a bone through his nose and a subtitle reading about treasure troves of scientific knowledge being lost by tribes going extinct. Now, I wondered what scientific knowledge could be possessed by tribes without a written language. But close examination revealed that these tribes are going extinct because of the work of Christian missionaries. And they particularly attacked the works of New Tribes Mission and Wycliffe Bible Translators. As these tribes are evangelized and come to Christ, they abandon the old tribal religion of headhunting and cannibalism and spirit worship and polygamy. To the scientists, these tribes are going extinct because they no longer walk around naked. And because now they no longer engage in body scarification and body piercing and tattooing. Now they wore clothes and glasses. And they went to the doctor instead of the witch doctor. And they had schools and were learning to read. And they only married once and they worshipped in church. They're obviously going extinct. Now, being somewhat ignorant of the science of anthropology, I would have thought that ending intertribal genocide and cannibalism, polygamy, and occultism, ending that was good. I would have also assumed that giving people a gift of literacy and medicines and improving their health and their extending their life expectancy and improving people's sight with glasses and bringing them the life-transforming gospel of Jesus Christ, I would have all thought that was preferable to allowing them to languish in superstitious ignorance and animistic fear. But no. As National Geographic articles bemoan the cultural genocide of New Tribes Mission and other pioneer missions in the Amazon jungle like Wycliffe Bible Translators, they pointed out these missionaries are destroying the cultural distinctives of unique tribal cultures. Like if you think of David Wilkerson going into the inner city of New York and Harlem, he destroyed the tribal distinctives of these gangs that were killing one another, and he got people like Nicky Cruz saved. I mean, how terrible is that? Apparently, it's preferable to have illiteracy, polygamy, incessant tribal warfare, cannibalism, and human sacrifice, and slavery, and high infant mortality and low life expectancies, not to mention people dying without the knowledge of Christ, just so that journalists and anthropologists can have the more interesting and financially lucrative photo ops of naked savages engaging in body scarification and eating their neighbors. Romans 1:21, for although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But the thinking became futile, and the foolish hearts were darkened. We need to understand animism. Animism is spirit worship. It is the primary religion of over 100 million tribal people scattered throughout Africa, New Guinea, the Pacific Islands, North and South America, Australia, New Zealand, India, and Japan. Elements of basic animism are also adhered to by many Muslims, Buddhists, and nominal Christians. So they might openly claim to be Christians, for example, in Tahiti or Brazil, but you see there's a lot of voodoo as well. Or they might claim to be Muslims, but they in fact adhere to tribal animism, especially in Indonesia, and similarly with many Buddhists as well. And the Maoris of New Zealand, people often talk about the Maoris as the original inhabitants of New Zealand. That's not true. The Maoris invaded and ate the original inhabitants of New Zealand. And cannibalism was common amongst the tribes of the Pacific Islands. And the Hakka dance, which the All Black rugby team likes to perform, is actually an occultic Maori witchcraft dance, putting a curse on the enemies and saying, we're going to eat you, literally. And so I don't know why people think that's funny, having characters like that. This is against all ideas of what decent sportsmanship is. And I think the Hakka is crude, vulgar, occultic, satanic, and it's against all good rules of sportsmanship. And yes, when they're opening their mouth like this and so on, they're saying, we are going to eat you up. I mean, that's all part of their Hakka dance and symbolism. Now, when you look here, you can see the blue. The darker the blue, the higher the percentage of animists in Africa, according to the Operation Ball statistics. If you look at Operation Ball's breakdown of religions of the world, you'll notice that Christians fall into about 32% of the world's population. It's a little bit more now. This is 2010 statistics. Notice the Protestants, Independents, Anglicans, Catholic, Orthodox, Marginals, and Unaffiliated, and so on. So that's how the 32% break down. Now, we talk about animists. That's in this 10% block here. Traditional ethnic animist, shamanist, spiritist. Some of them would also be Taoist, Confucian, Shinto, Sheikh, and so on. And of course, there's elements of Jewish Kabbalah and Baha'i who also have elements of animism in it too. So it's probably bigger than the 10% of the world's population because this is people's primary affiliation. People can be both. Just like you get people who are secular humanists, even though they're openly Christians. Or you could get a person who is Muslim, Hindu, or Christian, but he's also an animist. Animism here, the 10% only applies to where that's their primary identification, not their secondary. You can see here the world's growth rate is 1.4, basically. And you can see how Islam and Hinduism are growing faster than the world's birth rate, but ethnic and Buddhist are shrinking. Christians are growing more than the world's birth rate, but the Catholics are losing ground, the Orthodox are losing ground, the Protestants are gaining, Anglicans and Independents, Evangelicals, Pentecostals, and Charismatics are growing much, much faster than the world's birth rate. Animism includes necrolatry, that is the worship of the souls of the dead. Tribal people tend to regard departed ancestors as part of the clan and fear the harm that these departed can do to the living, especially those who died unnaturally. Car accidents, poison, bolts of lightning, things like that, murder. And they believe that those who died unnaturally will come back and haunt them. Ghosts, basically. Animism includes spirit worship. The tribal religions believe in the existence of personal spirits or demons as well as impersonal spiritual forces in nature, which inhabit the earth. They will worship air, fire, water, trees, mountains, animal life, certain types of animals, and so on. For life for them is dominated by a host of taboos, things you're not allowed to do, and rituals to placate the spirit. There's always witch doctors or shamans or priests, and these are expert mediators who know the proper incantations and the sacrifices at times of sickness and disaster to placate the spirits. They have magic, of course. Now, there's imitative magic and contagious magic. Imitative magic seeks to bring harm to an enemy by taking a representation. They have a voodoo doll of you, and they stick needles in a voodoo doll. I know there's a few people who've done that for me. There's contagious magic, where they get a connection between the person and his hair. They get some of his hair, they get some of his nail cuttings, sweat, spit, feces. Historically, the Swazi people teach that they managed to defeat King Shaka Zulus, who were unbeaten in battle normally. They beat them because somebody managed to infiltrate Shaka's kraal at Bulawayo. That's the Bulawayo in KwaZulu, not the Bulawayo later built by his follower Mzilikazi, who fled to Zimbabwe, what today is Zimbabwe. And they got hold of some of the semen of Shaka. How they got hold of it, who knows? And they claimed that this enabled them to put a spell that caused the Zulu warriors to lose in the fight against the Swazi. And so their contagious magic gained them a national military victory. And, well, bear in mind, the Greeks believe a whole lot of weird things about, the war in Troy was the result of a competition between three goddesses. And because Paris, who was one of the princes of Troy, chose Aphrodite, was it? Against Athena and the other one. That's why these other goddesses ganged up and got the rest of the Greek cities to go and attack Troy. And the 10-year war in Troy and destruction of Troy is all as a result of a beauty competition between these goddesses, and that Paris chose the goddess who was the goddess of Troy. And so Troy gets destroyed, one of the greatest cities in the world at that time, one of the most famous wars in history, as a result of supernatural forces carrying on. So it's not like the West doesn't have some of these weird beliefs as well. But this is animism. The blood of an animal or person may be drunk in order to gain the strength of that animal, or in the case of cannibalism, that person. Idi Amin ate human flesh. He killed the Archbishop of the Anglican Church in Uganda, and he ate his liver and his heart and his brains, and he had the body parts of a whole lot of his enemies in his fridge, and he used to snack on them at night, and this, he believed, gave him power over them. Mobutu Sese Seko was a cannibal. So was Samora Machel. So was Jomo Kenyatta. These are all people who engaged in human sacrifice and ate human body parts. In Mozambique, I have seen scenes like this, where you see a human skull, bones broken up by fire, cannibalism is back. In Rwanda, the massacre of 800,000 Hutu, Tutsi by the Hutu, in the space of only 6 weeks, was in large extent motivated by animism, anti-Christian prejudice, and there was a lot of human sacrifice and even eating of people that they had murdered. So Rwanda is an example of animistic hatred and tribalism. Here, up in the battlefront in Sudan, I was offered by somebody a skull of an Arab. I politely declined. I mean, what am I going to say to customs, trying to come through customs with a skull in my case? And it would be a bit too Shakespearean, Macbethian to have a skull on your desk or something like that as a paperweight. Don't think that technology necessarily gets people free from animism. Technology can go along with animism very happily. There are a lot of people animists who use all the technology from AKs to cell phones. There's always fetishism. Superstitious belief that there's some spiritual energy or force in charms, amulets, or fetishes. When I was growing up, I remember it was very common for people to have St. Christophers. And my brother used to, that's his favorite gift for a girlfriend, was a St. Christopher with his initials behind. And these St. Christophers are meant to protect you. I remember my father had a St. Christopher medallion, St. Christopher being the patron saint of travelers, on his car. And he would have it on the mantelpiece there, which he believed kept him safe while he was driving. There's people who have rabbit's foot and so on, which they think they stroke their lucky rabbit foot, which, if it worked, would still be on a rabbit. There's naturism, the personification and worship of the forces of nature. Like the Egyptians worshipped Ra, the sun god. You get people who worship the moon, like Islam. You get those who worship the stars. What do my stars say today, reading astrology? There's people who worship fire, volcanoes. Many of the Shintos in Japan worship the volcanoes. They're those who worship storms and certain types of animals. there's a lot of animism in the Indian tribes in North America. In ancient Egypt, they worshipped the sun. The sacred cow is worshipped by the Hindus in India. The sacred mountain of Shintoism in Japan, Mount Fuji. Naturism normally leads to idolatry. So animism and idolatry go together. And polytheism, the worship of many gods. Naturism normally relates to fertility. They worship their gods who are going to make them more prosperous, either more cows, bigger herds, bigger produce with the whatever crops are growing, and of course more children in the case of human reproduction. Very much like Baal worship, Asherah worship, they were also fertility animistic cults. Nature worship, rituals, and sacrifices are tended to guarantee fertility. And human sacrifices are an extreme example of this. I remember as recently as Julius Caesar of Rome would actually sacrifice humans, normally captured prisoners, and human sacrifices to guarantee his victory. And the war on Troy, Agamemnon, who was one of the Greek kings, sacrificed his daughter, teenage daughter, to the gods to ensure favorable winds for the battleships to reach Troy to destroy Troy because of this competition between the goddesses. And that's history. That happens. Totemism, or brother, sister, kinly, totem pole. You've heard of the Indian totem poles. At the World Council of Churches Conference in Vancouver, was that 1983? At the Indian witch doctors began the World Council of Churches Conference and made all the participants pass through the fire. They had a smoke over the entrance that had to pass through, basically jump through the smoke and the fire. And they had a big totem pole, Indian totem pole, had a whole witchcraft dance. And Emilio Castro, who was the general secretary of the World Council Church at the time, came back. I don't know how he fits it on the plane, but he brought back to Geneva World Council Church headquarters a totem pole from Indian witch doctors who were, instead of having devotions to open the World Council Churches, they had a witchcraft ceremony. If this makes sense to anybody. There are four major characteristics of animism. Number one, the whole of life is pervaded with fear and governed by fear. It's a lot of fear. They're afraid of all sorts of things. In fact, when a person dies of anything, it's a result of some witchcraft has made them die. So that the moment anyone dies from anything, can be drowning, fire, heart attack, lightning, snake bite, crocodile bite, doesn't matter what it is, somebody made it come about. And then the witch doctor will identify who's to blame. And often it's a neighboring tribe. They go to war and they wipe out the neighboring tribe. They're responsible for the chief's son dying and so on. A lot of fear. Number two, there's an absence of love and hope. People will sacrifice their own children in animism because they're more afraid of the spirits than they are loving their own children. I mean, that's how extreme it can be in animism. Just look at how in animism, the men generally see no need to carry heavy weights. The women must carry the heavy weights. And I've had this at, for example, Nuba Mountains, where the people have tried to get my backpack. And I've said, no, I'm not letting anyone carry my backpack. And they said, no, but you're upsetting our culture. You must give us your backpack. I said, but if I give you my backpack, you're going to give it to some teenage girl to carry in. That would be a great shame to me, because my culture, the man carries the heavy weight. No, you don't understand, he'd say. That's why God made the girls, to carry the heavy weights. This is the mentality of an animist. There's also no moral absolutes. Sin is seen as a violation of culture, custom, and spirit forces. Women can be scarred, killed, have boiling oil poured over them, like Mary Slessor documented how one woman, for giving a piece of fruit to a man. That was all. She was guilty of adultery for giving a piece of fruit to someone who was hungry, passing by a village. And they were going to pour boiling oil over her as she staked out on the ground. And Mary Slessor came in and stopped it. And the witch doctor tried to get her to back off, swinging his axe at her, and she would not budge. And the witch doctor gave up and fled. And the people saw that, in fact, the power of Mary Slessor's God was greater than the power of the witch doctors. But this is typical. Fatalism also is part of animism. There's a great sense of helplessness in the face of external forces. So, for example, the whole mentality of animism is I can't help myself. I'm a helpless victim. Example, we were in the Zambezi Valley doing courses and seminars during a terrible drought. We're now talking about in the early 90s up in Zambia and Zimbabwe. And during this terrible drought, people were dying of starvation, actually. And the children were wasting away. And they were within a few hundred meters of the Zambezi River, one of the biggest rivers in the world. And they were dying of starvation. I said, but why don't you build irrigation ditches to your fields? No, we can't do that. The government must do that. But your children are dying of starvation. No, the government's got to build. Well, why don't you carry buckets of water? You can do it at sunset. So you've got all night for the water to seep in. No, the government must do something like that, or the Americans. So they were literally sitting there happy for their children to die of starvation because they had a sense of, I'm helpless. Somebody else must help me. Everything's got to come from the outside. It's from the chief, from the ancestral spirits, from the government, from the Americans, from the United Nations, South Africans, whatever, missionaries. But I'm helpless. They've got all this manpower and they sit there absolutely dependent on others, shackled in their thinking because of animism, because I can't help myself. I'm a helpless victim. Things happen to me. I can't influence events. Events just happen to me. Heathenism does not deny God, but it ignores him by worshipping natural forces. And they also worship mysterious demon powers through magical ceremonies and sacrifice. In this case, this woman had to bite the head off a live chicken. This is part of a voodoo action in Haiti. What does the word of God say? Leviticus 19, verse 26 to 31. Do not practice divination or sorcery. Do not cut your bodies for the dead or put tattoo marks on yourself. I am the Lord. Do not turn to mediums or seek out spiritists, for you will be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. How much clearer can that be? We also read in Deuteronomy 18, when you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you, do not learn to imitate the detestable ways of the nations there. Let no one be found among you who sacrifices a son or daughter in the fire, who practices divination or sorcery, interprets omens, engages in witchcraft, or casts spells, or who is a medium or a spiritist, or who consults the dead. Anyone who does these things is detestable to the Lord. And because of these detestable practices, Lord your God will drive out those nations before you. You must be blameless before the Lord your God. This is the word of God in Deuteronomy 18. Now, we've got in South Africa some independent Zionist churches, they're called. Nothing to do with Israeli Zionism. This is the Zionism around Mount Zion that's just outside Pietersburg in Transvaal, for example. Many people go there. And so you get many of these very animistic religions. They've got a semblance of Christianity. There's something of the Holy Spirit. Not much understanding of the Trinity. Fair bit of Old Testament. Next to no New Testament. Very occultic. Very much superstitious. And so you do get a lot of animism mixed with Christianity in some of these independent Zionist churches, which actually have wrapped millions of people in. You can see they've got their uniforms. They gather together in that way. Now, Africa Maklope, who's been a visitor at our mission, we've got his book in our shop. He's written Christianity and the Veneration of Ancestors on Should a Christian Consult the Dead? And of course, no. But he exposes the very serious syncretism of mixing witchcraft with Christianity, which is in many churches, even in our country. An example of a country which is dedicated to ancestral spirits is Haiti, Northern Hemisphere, in the Caribbean. Wall Street Journal noted in its article, Haiti and the Voodoo Curse, the cultural roots of the country's endless misery, wrote that despite Haiti having received billions of dollars in foreign aid for the last 50 years, it receives the most aid in the whole of the Western Hemisphere, meaning South, Central, North America. But it remains the least developed country in the Western Hemisphere. It gets the most aid, more than all other countries in Central and South America combined, and yet it is the least developed country. Haiti has defied all developmental predictions. Operation World reports that Haiti is the poorest state in the Western Hemisphere, with over 75% of the population living on less than $2 a day. Unemployment effectively is around 70%. Only Zimbabwe would be worse. You can tell the difference between when you're crossing from the Dominican Republic, which is more Christian, to Haiti, which is overwhelmingly voodoo, because she could immediately see Haiti is 98% deforested. Haiti has some of the worst pollution, drought, famine, rapid rise of drug abuse, spread of AIDS in the Western Hemisphere. It's estimated that 75% of the population of Haiti are actively involved in voodoo, witchcraft. Haiti is at the top of the corruption index, and a huge amount, they say at least 25% of the police are in the pay of the drug lords and the gangs. When there was this massive earthquake in 2010, which was one of the worst natural disasters to ever hit the Western Hemisphere, over 300,000 died in it. But interestingly enough, it wasn't the worst earthquake in terms of the size on the Richter scale, it was the worst in terms of death toll. Chile, the same year, had an earthquake 10 times more severe on the Richter scale. And yet, I think only about 2 people died in Chile from their earthquake because they've got better building construction standards. Whereas in Haiti, just about everything fell to pieces in Port-au-Prince. The only building left standing at the airport, for example, was the Missionary Aviation Fellowship hangar. That was it. Interesting enough, all the different celebrities like Harrison Ford who flew their private plane over to take one load of relief to the people, lots of media coverage. The only place could go was the Missionary Aviation Fellowship hangar and sit at our good friend John Boyd's desk and use his phone and so on because that was the only thing operating there. Missionary Aviation Fellowship, but the only infrastructure, the UN, the American government, the American military, the Hollywood celebrities, they all had to use MAF's hangar and they all managed to avoid any acknowledgement of MAF or any picture that showed the MAF symbols despite all the media, even the press, that's where they had to go because there was nothing else standing. But don't expect any acknowledgement of the Christians on the ground who did most of the work in taking aid to the people. Harrison Ford's one flight got a lot of coverage. MAF's thousands and thousands of flights to help the people who had suffered from it got no coverage whatsoever. At its inception, 1803, Haiti was dedicated to Satan. It's a brutal, brutal, brutal revolution, and like the French Revolution, but this was even worse. And they dedicated to Satan. 200 years later, voodooism was declared the national religion of Haiti in a rededicating the country to Satan. The Wall Street Journal quotes Cameroonian development expert Daniel Etonga Manguel as observing voodooism is one of the principal obstacles to progress in Africa. Daniel Etonga Manuel observes Haiti's culture is powerfully influenced by its religion, voodooism. Voodoo is one of the numerous spirit-based or animistic religions common to Africa. It is without ethical content. There's no right or wrong. Its followers believe that their destinies are controlled by hundreds of capricious spirits. That's arbitrary spirits, who must be propitiated, here's the word propitiation again, propitiated through voodoo ceremony. You've got to remove the wrath over you by sacrifice, human and animal sacrifice, and ceremonies. Animism is a progress-resisting force, as he said. The Wall Street Journal observed the Haitian child is made to understand that everything that happens is due to the spirits. He's raised to externalize evil. Evil is not in your heart, evil is out there. And to understand he's in continuous danger. Haitians are afraid of each other. You'll find a high degree of paranoia in Haiti. Well, I've seen this amongst the Vendans in South Africa. We've got the highest amount of voodoo in our country. And amongst the Vendans, for example, they would teach, that's not a crocodile. That's an ancestral spirit that took the form of a crocodile. That person wasn't bitten by a snake. It's an ancestral spirit that took the form of a snake to bite them. This person died from that lightning bolt because this family over there put a curse on him and brought the lightning bolt down, and so on. The drought is caused by this neighboring tribe who we must go and kill, and so on. Animism is spirit worship. It involves necrolatry, the worship of the souls of the dead. The witch doctors or shamans are the expert mediators. They've got the incantations, throwing the bones, for example. Animism is a religion which sees a spiritual force behind every event, and many objects in the physical world have spiritual significance, they believe. Animism seems obsessed with invoking good luck and avoiding bad luck. And you know where luck comes from? Luck is a Hindu term. Lakshmi is a Hindu goddess. So the English soldiers in India got into the habit of speaking about good Lakshmi, because Lakshmi is the goddess of prosperity. And so this evolved into good luck. So when you speak about good luck, you're actually using the term from a Hindu goddess. Christians don't believe in luck. We may ask for God's blessings to be upon a person, but we cannot speak about luck because we don't believe in luck. We don't worship Lakshmi. We don't worship the goddess of chance and prosperity. Each community, an animistic community, is seen as having their own set of gods and spirits. These are territorial spirits. Fear plays a major role in the life of animists. They see the world as full of spirits and omens and spells and forces. So through magic and divination and sacred rituals, they're seeking protection to appease the gods, the spirits, and the ancestors. They observe numerous taboos and prohibitions, and they observe sacred places. For example, in Haiti, there's a sacred tree where a pact with the devil was signed over 2 centuries ago by witch doctors. And Christians some years ago, I think about 10 years ago or so, went to the tree and had a prayer meeting, and the voodooist would complain that the Christians had broken a spell and had ruined their pact with the devil by desecrating this holy place with their prayer meeting. How do you like that? Animists see a whole host of objects as sacred things with sacred power. And like you would have noticed with the Itao film, strangling people for breaking of some kind of rule or another is common. They recognize sacred persons and observe sacred actions. And one of these is the circumcision rituals of young men in the Khoisan tribe. Many hundreds of men have died from these dangerous circumcision rituals. This is when they 18, 19, 20 maybe. During the World Cup 2010, much publicity was given to a Burmese rock python owned by Sangoma in Yanga. It was alleged that this python was able to communicate to the Sangoma which team would win each match, and gamblers paid the Sangoma for his predictions. The SPCA found the snake to be underweight, suffering from dehydration, mouth rot, pneumonia, and confiscated the python to give it medical care, which SPCA has legal right to do. The Sangoma, 25-year-old Siyabonga Matwetwe, said the SPCA does not understand Sangomas. And everything I said does not make sense to them, he said, which we understand. The High Court in Pietermaritzburg found 28-year-old Smungus Liso Ngobani guilty of murder for having slaughtered his 17-month-old baby daughter in a ritual killing. Amina Zava was stabbed by her father 6 times in what the state witnesses described as an offering to the ancestors. Ngobani testified he heard voices that told him to do this. Now, he might well have heard voices to tell him to do this, but there would have been a voice of evil spirits. 2 teenage girls in Johannesburg were doused with petrol and set alight in a satanic ritual. And the provincial police spokesman reported the girls were tied up by their friends and burned in what seemed to be a satanic ritual. Tied up by their friends? With friends like that, who needs enemies? The Star quoted from Isabella Little of the Teenage Advice Forum, Life Talk, Satanism is not spoken about often. But she mentioned an incident in Cape Town where a mother reported a teenage daughter was kidnapped and taken to a satanic church where another teenager was murdered in a sacrifice. She managed to escape, but she was understandably traumatized. Police investigated the incident, but never mentioned in the media. We always hear rumors about Satanism, she said, but it's not something people are talking about. We would like these people to come forward so that this can come out into the open. In Uganda, the government is setting up posters in the playgrounds and on roadsides warning of the danger of abduction of children by witch doctors for child sacrifice. Police have investigated hundreds of cases of child sacrifice, not child abuse, child sacrifice in Uganda. The mutilated bodies of children have been found and recovered at roadsides, and the Anti-Human Sacrifice Task Force, you've heard of Anti-Human Trafficking Task Force, is an Anti-Human Sacrifice Task Force of the police, reports there's a growing belief that when you sacrifice a child, you will get wealth. This is like Baal worship, Asher worship. There are people willing to buy these children to be sacrificed for the prosperity of their business. The UK-based charity Jubilee Campaign reports that they know of over 900 cases they know of human sacrifice just in Uganda. Churches are singing a song, Heal Our Land, End Child Sacrifice. Stolen Angels. A BBC undercover reporter filmed a local witch doctor who explained how the sacrifice of a child is the most powerful spell, and the witch doctor was recorded saying, broadcast on BBC, There are two ways of doing this. We can bury the child alive on your construction site, or we can cut him into different pieces and put the blood in the bottle for spiritual medicine, bury the body around their site. Now, you get, this is in South Africa, Dr. Uber's clinic now. He offers best prices for your body parts and organs. And eyes up to 5,000 in cash, breast up to 1,800, tongue 2,500 in cash, rhino parts available at clinic. That's so expensive they don't tell you right now. Testicles up to 1,600 each, hands, kidney up to 3,800. Safe, quick, 24-hour recovery. And this is legal? How is this legal? Here's cell phoners, there's websiters, and somehow or another you can advertise openly for this?
But is that real?
Yes, I'm afraid it is. I've come across this. I've seen this outside Joburg Station, right facing St. Mary's Cathedral. Witch doctor shops advertising just things like this, openly. I bet you could find Cape Town.
Stop suffering in silence. Rush to get that cash you need. If not for you, do it for your loved one.
So, I mean, people are either selling some body parts of theirs, or maybe they've taken it from some neighbor. Sindefi Spogota Kamasina of the National Executive Committee of Traditional Healers Association claimed that the roads of South Africa are haunted because whites have not fetched the spirits of the dead from roadside accident scenes. He explained that the growing Christian tradition of putting up roadside memorial crosses, you've seen some crosses, maybe some flowers by the side of roads, this stops the soul of the deceased from departing from the accident site. So he claims that the roadside memorials are causing accidents because the white people do not appease their ancestral spirits, their loved one spirits. And in African traditions, the spirit of the dead is brought home from the scene of the death. They use a branch from a young tree to seep up the spirit and take it to the body, which must then be buried in an ancestral area. Although there are many people living in Khayelitsha, and they might have a graveyard there, but I haven't seen it yet, including driving all over and flying over Khayelitsha a number of times. I haven't seen where their graveyard is, because anyone we know from Transkei who dies in Khayelitsha, their body's got to be transported to Transkei at great expense to be buried there. At one point, an ancestor of someone who worked at the mission died, and they were needing to raise vast amounts of money to transport the body there. And so one of the missionaries offered to use our mission vehicle, Abaki, to transport the body in the coffin across to Transkei at no cost. And the person was aghast. The family would never allow that. It's got to be in a traditional, expensive funeral parlor way, and so on and so forth. Now, our vehicle's been used in Sudan to transport people's bodies back to the village and so on. They've used us for an ambulance and for hearse, our buckies. But in Cape Town, not possible. You've got to use the most expensive, bankrupt yourselves, put yourself in debt for years and years. But it's got to be done top dollar. And people who run the funeral parlors in many of these townships, it's like as a guaranteed a way of getting rich as being a drug dealer. These and many other examples remind us that animism is very real. The consequences of dedicating a nation to ancestral spirits are very serious. The scriptures are clear. You shall not practice divination or soothsaying. You are not to give any regard to mediums and familiar spirits. Do not seek after them, to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. When the Bible says, when you come into the land which the Lord your God has given you, you shall not learn to follow the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found anyone amongst you who makes a son or his daughter pass through the fire, or one who practices witchcraft, or soothsayer, or one who interprets omens, or sorcerer, or one who conjures spells, or medium, or spirit, or one who calls up the dead. For all who do these things are an abomination to the Lord. And because of these abominations, the Lord your God drives them out before you. You shall be blameless before the Lord your God. For these nations which you dispossess, they listen to soothsayers and diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God has not appointed such for you. And so the people of Israel, when they went into the land of Canaan, there were the Jebusites and the Hittites and the Amorites who were all into this witchcraft. And the Lord says, well, that's why I'm giving you their land and driving them out as judgment for their abominations. But if you turn to those, I'll drive you out the land too. In fact, that happened. And so what do we say about countries in Europe built on Christian civilization for centuries turning back to witchcraft today. Harry Potter and all of them. They're going to be driven out of their lands. They're going to lose their land. And this is the warning of Scripture. The Scriptures are clear. We are not to communicate with the spirits of departed ancestors. It is appointed unto man once that, and after that the judgment. These ghosts, these spirits of people communicate to, they're not their ancestors. They're some demons pretending to be. Because there's a gulf set between the dead and the living. A great gulf makes communication between them impossible, the Lord told us in Luke 16:26. So my father, when his mother died, went to clairvoyant to contact the spirit of his departed mother, and he thought he gained contact with her. Well, when I got converted, this was brought to my attention, memory and conscience, and I sought counseling, and I was in Hospital Christian Fellowship at the time as an intern there, and I remember renouncing and breaking those spirits and recognizing this ancestral bondage. And I did feel a serious breakthrough from that. And when my father was converted later, he was convicted of that sin as well, of contacting clairvoyance and so on. Many people who think that communicating with ancestral spirits are actually communicating with deceptive demons and unclean spirits, evil spirits, fallen angels who rebelled and have been bound in darkness for judgment. Their power is limited. They serve the devil, the prince of darkness, the prince of this world. Occult practices all honor Satan rather than God. Occultism makes enemies of God the guiding forces and enemies of God the source of knowledge. Those who give heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons are departing from the faith. We commanded, do not learn the way of the heathen. And I'm afraid right now they're doing it in our schools. Is Harry Potter books not part of some school curriculum reading projects? I've heard people in our schools in South Africa being required to make up potion, make up spells, make up curses. What animal would you like to be turned into? You know, sort of brother bear, shape-shifting type of things. All kinds of occultic things. Write out your own spell and things like this as part of English classes, for goodness sakes. Now, what do the animists think when they look at our homes and they see we've got a Briefley spot at our home? You know what they think? My friend, Reverend Fanus Abisi from Kwasi Advanta Mission said to me, you know what unconverted Zulus think you whites do when you have a Briefley? You're worshipping your ancestral spirits. You've got an altar in the back of your garden. You have fire. You have meat. You have a sacrifice. There's prayer. You invite only members of your own clan. Obviously, you worship your ancestors. So you're doing just what you condemn us for, but you do it yourself when you have a Briefley. Isn't that interesting? Not saying that you shouldn't have a Briefley. I'm saying that's what they interpret. So this is worshipping ancestral spirits, something. Now, I'm a member of the Moths, the Memorial Order of the Tin Hat. And of course, every 11th of November, all over the world, those who've been military veterans will gather at some memorial and they will lay flowers, wreaths, and so on in front of the memorial, and they'll stand, hands in front of themselves, bow their heads and pray. Now, we know what they're doing. They're remembering the sacrifice of people who died in previous wars, maybe even ancestors of theirs. What does an animist see when he sees us do this? He assumes we're worshipping our ancestors. Now, we're not. We don't worship our ancestors. But it looks like it to an animist, does it not? A friend of mine who studied at college, at Baptist Theological College with me, has parents were missionaries to the Congo, and he was trained to go to the Congo. He went to the Congo with his young child, and nobody would speak to them. Nobody would attend their services. They were ostracized, and after all the study and practice and trouble and language acquisition, all this, what was the problem? Finally, they got someone to confide in them. It was their baby food, Gerber baby food. Because, you know, as explained, you have tins of beef with a picture of a cow on the outside, and you eat the contents, which is meat. You've got tins of strawberries and banana and all kinds of things, peaches. You've got a picture of the peach on the outside and you eat the contents. And you're feeding your child baby brains. I mean, why would you put a picture of the baby on the cover of this glass jar if that wasn't the content? How can you do this? We turned away from cannibalism a long time ago. This is disgusting. And, well, why would we put a child's picture on the head of a jar if that wasn't the content? You can see the logic. Another example. Church of Scotland part of the Gordon Memorial Mission, has sent out Reverend James Dalzell to KwaZulu. And he established a mission station, which later became a clinic and the Church of Scotland Hospital in Tugela Ferry. And today you can go to Tugela Ferry, and here's the hospital. And it's, in fact, one of the it's the only hospital, actually, about 100 kilometers around in any direction. And so the reverend, when he died, he asked that his body be cremated. He's retired in Scotland. And the ashes be flown back to South Africa and brought to the river and be sprinkled in the Tugela River beside the beloved mission station, chapel, and hospital, Church of Scotland Hospital that he set up. This caused chaos. In fact, the local missionary said it put back the cause of the gospel decades. Reverend Dalzell should have known better. What did the local animus see? All the ministers of Tugela Ferry went down to Durban Airport, received the ashes in a silver cup, brought it back, went in procession singing to the chapel, had a memorial service, walked with procession, somebody in front holding this silver cup lid on. And when they got to the water of Tugela River, where they do all their washing, cooking, where all their water they need for cooking, drinking, washing from, the lifeline of the village, and they sprinkled the ashes of this man on the water. They put a curse on the community. These Christians condemn us for witchcraft. And look what they're doing. They're doing the same thing. They're sprinkling the muti, the powerful magic of this man's ashes, on the life water of the community. How can they condemn us for witchcraft when they do the same thing? It doesn't matter that it wasn't a sin or done with malice. It was done in ignorance, and it did a tremendous amount of damage. Because when you're dealing with animists, you've got to think like an animist thinks. You've got to understand what they're seeing. Your briflace is ancestor worship. Your memorial service is ancestor worship. And a cremation, why would a Christian do cremation anyway? But it's bad. Now, how do we respond? The Bible teaches us, do not fear Satan or any of his demons. Stand up against him in the strength of the Lord. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of self-discipline. Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. You have this as one of the chapters in your Great Commission manual. Any questions, any comments, complaints, observations?
When you study ancient Greek and Roman mythology, Egyptian mythology, is that not partaking in learning of the ways of these pagan nations?
Yes, it is.
So then, is there a right way of understanding this cultural?
Yes. Look. Just like when we went to the castle on Saturday, and you see that although Reformed Christians built this castle, they still had these two statues up there over the doorway, of the gateway, of Poseidon and Neptune, two Greek mythology gods. I mean, these are idols, actually. Now, we're not thinking these people worshipped them, but it just showed part of their classical education included this, and they put it there. And to me, I think it would be a serious stumbling block to any new convert from animism coming and looking at this and thinking, why would Christians put up statues to some pagan god? It's weird. It's inconsistent. So again, I think it's fine for us as Christians to understand the paganism of our past, but it's very dangerous when we start to adopt any part of it into our culture, such as I think that was a serious compromise in putting that up, and that's why Commandant Coughlin was discussing, do we demolish that statue there, or do we keep it as an example of the history, even though it's history we disagree with? And obviously they decide to keep it, but it's very troubling when you get that kind of mythology brought into, and you get this in quite a few countries which are Christian, but they've then got, well, Greece has got a massive amount of it, huge amounts, and of course the Olympics are riddled with pagan idolatry and mythology. I don't know, I haven't paid attention to the latest ones, but I remember the Barcelona Olympics in 1992. This was like total paganism, the opening ceremonies. And the Greek ones, when was the Greek? Athens had a Olympics. Total idolatry for Zeus and Apollo and all the different Greek gods was part of their ancestral, the opening ceremony of the Olympics, where 2 billion people worldwide were watching this. And it's like the world was united, and in a revival of pagan idolatry. Yes. That is disturbing, if that's so. Yes. You might go up and look at Rhodes Memorial. Rhodes Memorial is modeled on a Greek temple.
Yeah.
So there's a disturbing, sometimes without discernment, people have accepted things from pagan sources.
So you talk about how do we evangelize?
Right, how do we evangelize animists? Well, of course, it's absolutely critical that we've got to get them free from all this pagan thinking. Bible teaching, obviously, evangelism. You often might start with the Jesus film, a Bible translation, chronological evangelism, such as was done in the guitar film, A New Tribes Vision, where they start in creation, they work their way through. You've got to lay very solid foundations. You can't just walk in, give a quick check publications, think one presentation is going to do it. We've got to give them the history of God's salvation history through the nation of Israel, from creation through the temple, tabernacle, and so on, to Christ's life, death, resurrection, ascension, coming again, day of judgment. So you need solid evangelism and Bible teaching, for sure.
Yes. That's a very encouraging one, where the people went and it was headhunters, I think, that the tribes were killing each other and couldn't have peace, and these missionaries was working there for long and just couldn't work. So they told the people, listen, if you're not going to listen to us, we're going to leave. And they didn't want the missionaries to leave because they brought all the medicine. So they came to offering, the tribes offered each other children.
They found a redemptive analogy in their culture, which they were able to point out that Jesus is the peace child. Now, for us to have peace with heaven. It's brilliant. Well worth seeing that peace child film. So those are good examples. Don Richardson's book, Peace Child, is excellent. He also wrote Lords of the Earth, which is another good example of how a very inaccessible headhunting tribe was won to Christ.